If you're ready to invest the money yourself, you may choose to invest it in bonds. Bonds are essentially loans to the government and corporations. If you look in the long term, they paid something like 5.2% in average in the US bond market over the last 30 years. For example, if in 2003 a company decides to borrow 10 million, it will issue 10,000 bonds which are worth 1,000 each. Each of these bonds promises to pay back the nominal principal, which is here 1,000, at the maturity date, let's say in 2005, paying an annual coupon of 10%. How would such a stream of payment look like? It is known already in advance. So you will give 1,000 to this company, and after 1 year, the company will pay you back 100. After 2 years, it will pay you back another 100. That's the 10% coupon, which it promises to pay. And in 2005, which is at the end of the bond, it will return the money, which is the 1,000 you paid initially. So at the end of the contract, you will get 1,200 back from the 1,000 you invested initially. How much would such a bond be valued today? You know already in advance what is the stream of payment, and in a risk-free economy where the interest rate is fixed, it's easy to discount the money back to the present time. Let's take a risk-free interest rate from the central bank of 1%. Then after 1 year, you know that you get a first coupon. You discount this back at 1%, which gives you 99 instead of 100. That means the 99 you have today will grow to 100 exactly after 1 year. You have a second coupon appearing after 2 years. You discount these 100 back 2 years, so you multiply it by the exponential of minus 0.02, which gives you 98. So this 98 today will grow up to 99 in 1 year and 100 in 2 years. And then the final money, which you will get back in 2005, you can discount it back to today's prices. So 1,000 discounted back 2 years will give you 980. If I add all the different components of this stream of payments, I arrive at the 1,177. That is the value the bond should have today if the interest rate is fixed. In fact, you can see that each bond can be decomposed in linear combinations of bonds which do not pay any coupon. These bonds are the so-called zero coupon bonds. So the 98, the 99, and the 980 are the present values of zero coupon bonds which mature at the time when the payment will be made. In practice, the price of a bond is more complicated, and this mainly because of two reasons. The spot rate, which I took in the example of 1%, varies in time because the central bank changes its guide rate. When Alan Greenspan reduces his interest rate, in fact, he will change the spot rate of 1% up or down according to what is good to for the economy. Trichet will do the same soon for the European Central Bank. So the spot rate is uncertain and can affect the value of the bond in time. A second reason why the value of a bond is uncertain is that the company may go bankrupt in between and may not pay back the loan at all, in which case you lose the investment altogether. There is rating agencies which try to rate the risk that you take when you invest in a company. There is now three rating agencies, Standard & Poor, Moody's and Fitch, which are recognized by the Securities Exchange Commission in the United States. These agencies rate the bonds from the very safe ones, which are called investment grade and are labeled usually with the best AAA, AAA, a little bit worse AA, a little bit worse simple A, and then even worse would be the BBB, down, and BBB is in fact the lowest grade, which is still qualifying for what is called investment grade. If you go below, then you become BB, down to single B, triple C, double C. Double C is the lowest required for so-called speculative bonds. And below double C, the bonds are usually called junk or default. Some people say that these rating agencies, in fact, put the cart before the horse. It should be the investor who decides whether a bond should be worth more or less, not the rating agencies. The markets should be the judge and not only three rating agencies who may have interest on their own. And also, sometimes it's difficult to analyze and predict what is the quality of the bond. For example, Enron and WorldCom both bankrupted in 2002, and none of them was predicted by none of the rating agencies. In fact, all the companies had very good grades just before the company totally went bankrupt. The bonds are traded on the bond market, where the investor will basically buy and sell for a certain spot price, which is then reported in the news. Check the table 1 for different type of bonds, which basically will give you the issuer, the redemption date, the date when the money will be given back, the value of the coupon, the Standard & Poor rating, and the price of the bond today. The bid yield will give you an indication of how much this bond will give you back in time every year if you bought this bond today, provided that the company doesn't go bankrupt. If you look in average, what are the credit spreads? That means the difference between the return guaranteed by the central bank and the higher returns expected for risky investments, then in average you will see that the investment grades have between 100 and 200 basis points. One basis point is basically a percent divided by 100. That means 100 basis points is 1%. So the credit spread for investment grades is usually between 100 and 200 basis points, whereas for junk or low quality bonds, it can be anything from 700 to 1100 basis points. So you will have a higher return, up to 11% higher than what the central bank is promising, but you will have to carry the risk that the company or the government defaults on that bond. For example, Argentina defaulted on its own bonds in 2001. So even government bonds are not sure to always withstand the test of time. Let us take an example now of a bond, here in the case Marconi, which emitted a bond which expires in 2010 with a coupon of 6 3/8. The principal is worth 1,000 euros, which correspond to 100%. In fact, before the company was renamed, the forerunner GEC had a very good rating, a AAA rating on its bond. In July 2001, Marconi issued a profit warning, and very quickly, with the downgrade of the telecom operators in 2001, the stock value fell and the bonds also fell down as much as 65%. In fact, the share went down further, it went down 80%. But the bond lost 65% of its value because people were suddenly worried that Marconi would go bankrupt. If you bought then the bond after the fall at a value of 35% only of the nominal principal, you would in fact start to make much higher money now. You would in fact get the yield of 26.7%, provided that the company doesn't go bust in the meantime. That's for the example of a bond. Now, be aware that if you invest in bonds, it is important to minimize the costs. And usually, the governments allow you to reduce your own taxes, and even you may not have to pay taxes at all if you invest in government bonds. That's a very useful feature which you should exploit in the case of bonds. If you accept a higher level of risk and aim for the 11% long-term average growth in the US stock market in the past century, then you may want to buy stock and become a co-owner of a company. Every quarter of a year, the management emits a quarterly report showing what are the current profits and the development of the company. And even more often, the management sometimes emits profit warnings when suddenly it expects not to meet the targets. This affects the price of the shares and will affect the fate of your investment. The shareholder assembly once a year usually decides to pay out a dividend per share based on the earnings of that company. That is the way you get the money out from a company which is not growing. If they decide not to pay out any dividend and simply reinvest that money in their own company, the company may grow very much more quickly. So growing companies usually don't pay out dividends because they need the cash anyway to grow. And this has also another advantage. In many countries, the tax on capital gain is lower than the tax on earnings, and therefore the tax you will have to pay after having made gains with a share value which rose in time will be larger, the tax will be lower than on the dividends you have to pay as earnings. The shares are traded on the stock market, and the spot price of shares are reported every day in the news. For example, check the table 2, which shows for every company what is the price, what is the change in value, what was the highest and the lowest point, the volume of the trade, how many shares were exchanged every day, the dividend yield of each company, and the so-called price-earning ratio, which gives you an indication of how much you have to pay for a certain earning from the company. So the higher the price-earning ratio is, in fact, the less attractive the share becomes, unless it grows very, very quickly. Usually, price-earning ratios are around a factor of 10, but with bubbly economies, you can go as large as 30 or 50. Check in particular how the Marconi share fell even more than a bond. In fact, it fell more than 80% when the telecom operators were downgraded in 2001. If you check the syllabus online, you have the possibility to download the historical values of any company in the US in the last 5 years. Check the Market Solution applet and try to download the data to your own computer so that you can manipulate it with programs. You may want to check MATLAB and calculate quantities from the downloaded data. You can check what is the value of the drift and the volatility, which is calculated using a uniform or an exponentially weighted moving average over the last 180 days. And you will do these calculations yourself if you're taking the course at an advanced level in one of the exercises in this chapter, which will allow you to monitor these quantities all by yourself. If you now look at the closing prices of these companies, you can compare with the descriptions we made with the virtual market experiments in the previous section. Try to identify what is the drift, the systematic change of the price of a company, and try to relate it with the numbers which are given in the applet. Do the same for the volatility, which will give you an idea of what is the uncertainty of, or the disagreement the investors reflect on the markets. Altogether, this section showed that to achieve a higher return, investors have to take a higher amount of risk. Now, how much risk should you take if you make an investment? That is really personal. You should definitely not take as much risk as to wake up overnight. And you should make sure that a fluctuation will not suddenly dash out all your investment. However, it is necessary that you take a certain number of risks if you want to have decent returns. And what we will see in this course is that your goal will be to choose a certain amount of risk and try to invest for this amount of target risk as efficiently as possible. The modern portfolio theory in the next chapter will deal with exactly this question in a simplified way.